Hello and welcome back to Doing a Leeds. We are now on episode 8 with myself, Jermaine Beckford, and this lovely handsome fellow over here,
Matthew Lewis. We are 6 match weeks through the season.
Unbelievably.
We've managed to get to episode 8. We're going to be talking about many things this week. But first, tis the season. Would like to quickly ask an update on your pumpkin patch. I know you were talking big licks last week. How's it going?
It's going really, really well.
Not
for myself though. I'll be honest with you, it's nowhere near where I thought it would be at this point. That's mainly because I've not done anything with it.
Okay.
You know, it's I've been very busy. So I've kind of neglected it.
The pumpkins have suffered, have they?
They have, and I feel bad.
Yeah. I actually went to a pumpkin patch on Saturday. It's a bit of an American sort of pastime in the fall.
Because you're American now.
In the fall. They go to a pumpkin patch. So I went, and I mean, the pumpkins were fine. You know, it's all right. I'm not really into them. But they were serving pulled pork sandwiches. I have been trying to cut down on my red meat, as we've discussed previously.
Yes.
I don't eat beef anymore. But they smelt really good. And I was a little hungover after the game.
Do not think of the
Friday.
Animals, the poor animals.
Well, here's the rub, Bex, because I was hungover after the game on Friday and I was like, I'm sorry, I have to have that. So I had these pulled pork sandwiches or sliders, as they call them. And then this chap comes over and says, hey, would you like to come and pet the piglets? You want to come and feed the piglets? So I went over the way, went into a cage, and they got these like 6-7 of these little tiny, gorgeous little piglets that I'm feeding apples to, and I'm petting, and I feel great. And I suddenly realize what a horrible thing that I've just done.
And they're like
licking my fingers, and I'm like, you don't want that. You can't have that. Oh, I felt terrible. And if they'd done that the other way around, if they'd said, do you want to pet the piglets first and then you can eat? I would not have had that after I'd pet them gorgeous little wee things. And I'm annoyed about
that. Is
that
why you brought a couple home?
I wish I had. I tell you, if my dog wouldn't have ripped them to shreds, I would have done.
Would you? Yeah?
We had a discussion, like my wife and I were like, should we get a pig? George Clooney's got a pig. So it's not weird.
No, for George, it's not weird. No, of course not.
So we might get a pig in future. Should we talk about Leeds?
Let's go on to Leeds. Right, so we played against Wolves. Great game. Got robbed at the end. Unfortunate to have conceded a goal. Calvin Phillips deflection. You know, these things happen. That aside, I think it was a very good game. We did really, really well. Put that behind us. That's a loss. Second loss of the season. To be fair, if you're going to lose games during the season, in the first 6 games, I don't mind losing to Liverpool and one to Wolves. You know, if you look at playing against Man City, playing against Sheffield, playing against Fulham, you know, like there are so many games there that you could have said, tell you what, that's touch and go whether we're going to pick up many points from.
Mm.
You know, we're absolutely smashing it. I think we're on 10 points now, 5th in the league. We're in the Europa League spot, 5th or 6th in the league, I think it is, Europa League spot. I'm over the moon with that.
I was bitter last week, as you know.
No.
Were you? I was a bit bitter last week, and you nursed me through it. You changed my outlook. And you know what you said, and I told everyone in the pub this, you said something that's really kind of had a really great impression on me, actually, weirdly. You said about how those lads are going to be so, they want to get back out as soon as possible, and that them playing on Friday is the best thing that could have happened. So they're not stewing on that game. And that's exactly what happened. You were so right about that. They came out all guns blazing.
And going up against a team like Villa, who have come off 4 wins in 4 games.
Well, they've already won the Premier League, haven't they? So it was a big deal for us to...
That's what Gabby Abondahor keeps saying.
Yeah.
Nonsense.
So it was a big deal to beat Premier League champions Aston Villa,
who avoided relegation by 1 goal. But we won't get into that. That's nonsense. We don't need to get onto that. But to have the performance and play the way we played and dominate the game in the manner that we did as well is absolutely, it just speaks volumes for all the boys and the gaffer and the mindset and mentality. I know we keep saying that. I know we've banged on about it over the last few weeks or whatnot, but it's amazing. It's genuinely amazing. And now other clubs are going to be coming up against us, home and away, and they'll be looking at us thinking, tell you what, I think Leeds are going to finish top six. This is going to be a difficult game for us. They're going to be all over us, non-stop pressure, constant energy all over the pitch, left to right, front to back. It's going to be hard work. So they'll naturally be going into the game on the back foot, thinking the defensive mindset. It's perfect for us. So they're approaching the games against us like a top six mentality.
Exactly. To see these other teams that, you know, Leicester, who are playing up next, we'll talk about that in a bit, and Wolves, you know, these teams who are European football teams. They're playing in Europe. Leicester won the league not long ago. And they're looking at Leeds and going, we've got to smash and grab. We've got to park the bus and try and nick one here against little old Leeds, you know?
Who have just come up from the Championship, who are expected to go straight back down again. Yeah. And look at us. Look what we're doing. Look what we're creating. It's amazing.
With Villa, I mean, there's so much to talk about. I know one aspect that I was buzzing about was not getting that goal in the first half, which is obviously difficult when you've created so many chances. Frustrating. I thought it could be we've talked about the Arsenal game in the Cup last year, the Wolves game when we had all that possession but did very little with it in the first half. And I thought the second half, they're going to come out, Villa, and they're going to have changed shape and they're going to be, you know, they're going to work around the press better. And they just didn't. And Leeds were just like, just carried on where they left off at the end of the first half. And I wonder if that's a change in psyche as well, where they're just like, we can't have what happened to us at Wolves. Let's not drop down a gear just because it's the second half. Let's keep going. Let's get that goal.
Absolutely. Listen, I just looked at the stats, had a brief look at the stats from the game. We had 27 shots against them. 27 yeah. shots? Are you joking me? Like, that's incredible. That shows you mindset. That shows you mentality. We've got 60% possession against them. And these are guys who have had one of the best starts to the season. You know, they going into the game were on 100% win ratio this season. They've had a great return from lockdown as well. They've done really well. We put them to the sword.
They're not speculative shots. They're like chances, like decent chances.
Yeah. It says we got 13 off target, but of those 13 that were off target, we're talking millimetres to centimetres. We're not talking high and wide clearing the stadiums, you know? We're talking about goalkeepers really worried here.
Yeah, I mean, Pablo Hernandez was off target, but should have been a goal, really, shouldn't it?
Yeah. Do you know what? The maestro... Oh man, he could have had a couple, I think, as soon as he came on. There were one or two that flashed across the 18-yard box. He tried to open up his body. He let it go across his body a bit too much. He waited a little bit too long, which was a shame. But to have players like that coming off the bench, man, come on.
Well,
how cool is that?
I mean, that is it, isn't it? When you've got I want to talk about let's go to the start of the game. And there's a crucial moment that occurs in this game where our bench becomes massive. Obviously, we're missing two centre halves, Cooper and Llorente, Captain Cooper, obviously. We're missing the talisman, Calvin Phillips.
Yep.
And we're going up against a team that scored 7 against Liverpool.
Yep.
So immediately, I'm thinking the worst. I like Strike a lot. I have no concern about him at all. I just thought, you know, with him in defensive mid, and literally nobody in my mind, literally nobody to come on if it's not going well. Like, what if this doesn't start well? What do we do?
We are stuck. We're in a predicament, aren't we? Yeah.
Well, that's what I thought. And then obviously he gets booked.
10 minutes. Early.
Which was a soft booking. I mean, it's a foul. Grealish, who I don't want to talk about very much today, dragged his foot in. It sort of bought the yellow card.
Do you know what? I know you don't want to talk about Grealish, but I'm a fan of Grealish. I'm a fan of Jack Grealish. I think he's such a talented football player. I think he's brilliant. My issue with him is he could go to the next level. He could be something spectacular if he didn't dive, if he didn't make the most of silly little challenges. That's the only little thing about him that I just can't take. That aside, I think, mate, Struyck and Klitsch and Costa and Rodrigo and Jack Harrison and all these boys, when they were playing, when he was coming up against them, they showed him no mercy. Every single one of them. It was brilliant. It was great to watch.
So with Struyck getting this yellow card...
After 10 minutes.
after 10 minutes, and then obviously he has another foul, and you sort of think, well, what is it, three strikes and out? Next, you know, next foul or the one after is probably going to be a red card. And we've got, you know, 80 minutes to go.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think, was it 20th minute?
21st, yeah.
21st minute, Bielsa decides to take him off.
Brilliant.
Which so the two questions I have for you is, one, can you name many managers in the world that would make a call like that in the first 20 minutes of a game?
Do you know what? I would say probably Jose Mourinho. But okay. Him aside,
it's pretty,
no.
It's a world-class decision to make, isn't it?
Yeah. Especially if it's not an injury. If it's just
exactly.
for tactical reasons.
Yeah.
Like, that's mindset. That's genius.
And my second question is, just explain to me what the hell happened from then on. Because I was trying to figure it out when I was watching the game. You know, Shaq came on and I was like, where the fuck's he going to play? And they moved everyone around. And I was just like, Bex, just tell me what happened. How did we do that? Talk me through it, please.
I would love to. honestly, it's genius. What you have to remember is about this Leeds United squad, not just the 11 that play or the six or seven that's on the bench, the whole squad, the guys that are sitting in the stands, the guys that have been left at home, etc., is they all understand exactly where each one of them is supposed to play. So if you look at the back four, you look at who started, Alioski started, Ayling and Koch was in the middle with Stuart Dallas on the right wing, right back. Koch and Ayling, you know that they're not naturally going to play together. They're not naturally used to each other's games in those positions. But they know every single one of those back four. You could have changed the two centre-halves. Well, not so much Alioski, but you could have put Stuart Dallas playing centre-back and put Luke Ayling out wide on the right wing-back. And it would have made no difference. The overall gameplay would have been exactly the same. You know, they know where they're supposed to be at all times. It's like when they're training, they're all drilled as to where their position is when the ball's in this fifth of the pitch. When it's in that fifth of the pitch, I need you all to shuffle and you need to be here as quickly as you can. When we lose possession in the final third, when we're attacking, if you're watching it on Sky or BT or BBC or whatever you're watching it on, just pause it. 3 or 4 seconds after Leeds United have lost the ball in the final third, just pause it and you'll see the body language of every single one of the 5 or 6 players that are up front in the final third attacking. Every single one of them has got their head down and they're sprinting back to get into a position where they're going to make it so that it's so difficult to break down and get past. We played against Wolves. Now, I don't want to touch on this too much because it was a defeat and it was a painful defeat to take, taking into account how well we played during the game. But if you look at, there were a couple of opportunities where Wolves hit us on a counter-attack. And for a split second, I thought, oh no, they've got an overload. They've got their 4 attackers against our 3 defenders. But then 2 seconds later, we've got 6 or 7 players back against their 3 attackers. And I'm thinking to myself, that's unbelievable. It's genius. Yeah. You know, it's work rate and it's mentality and it's understanding that you have to come off the pitch finished. You have to come off the pitch with absolutely no energy left in the tank to be able to give everybody what we want to see and to be able to achieve the greatness that so far we've seen.
I don't even know where to begin, really. The fitness, obviously, is, as you've just alluded to there, out of this world. I mean,
absolutely.
Is it fair to say, I mean, I think we've talked about it before, but is it fair to say now the fittest team in the league, if not world football?
Yes.
In my opinion, we ran like, what is it, 9K or something, did I read that we ran on average more than the Villa players?
Exactly.
Which is a staggering figure.
And I think over Wolves, I think it was 5K per man more. Again, I think we'll get our fact checkers checking this out.
Yeah, we'll get on that
give
one.
Give them something to do while we're here having a little chinwag.
Yeah. But either way, the point is I've got a thumbs up from the producer there. I think that the point is extraordinarily fit. Everyone knows what position they are. Everyone's backing up each other. I mean, let's talk about Ayling for a second. saving that goal off the line. I mean, I know that's a defender's job, mate. And I know that that's, you know, he lost that ball, okay? And then his commitment to go, I've either got to get this back or I've got to do something to make sure that this is not going to goal, to just keep backing up and everyone fighting for the team and getting on the line and just to get his left foot on that was just class, wasn't it?
It was amazing. As you mentioned there, he's the one that gave the ball away initially. But he didn't stop and think to himself, oh no, yeah, I've cost us a goal. You know, he said to himself, all right, I've lost the ball. What I'm going to do, I'm going to get back as quickly as I can into a position. He's looked up, seen where the forward's going to strike the ball from. He sees Melier is covering the near post. Where can I go? I can cover the middle to the far post. And he did exactly that. And if you see how close it was to going over the line as well, by the way. Oh, wow. Unreal.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely
it's
unreal.
It's exceptional. And if it, you know, as someone who's, you know, a makeshift centre-half, for want of a better word, I mean, obviously he can play there, but it's not his regular position. Just what a brilliant, like, just to know exactly what his job is, I just think it's just brilliant.
But that could go for any one of those boys at the back.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought Alioski actually was excellent in his one of his rare starts these days.
Who saw that coming?
I didn't.
I know. I didn't see it coming, I'll be honest with you. Going forward, I've always appreciated him going forward. Defensively, I've always been a little bit concerned about what he does defensively because he's a little bit erratic at times. He was so disciplined against Villa. So disciplined.
Yeah.
Cash didn't know what he was doing, but I think that was down to us being on the front foot. Alioski and Jack Harrison worked so well, doubling up over Cash, exactly the same as Costa and Dallas on the other side against Target. Like, it was brilliant. The overload's fantastic.
I mean, you know, in terms of Bielsa tactics, I suppose if you don't have your defensive midfielder and you don't have a couple of centre halves, it doesn't really matter as long as you play the entire game in the opposition's half, does it?
Exactly.
So that's kind of the way we decided to do that. And then, as you said, going forward, everyone was just on fire. I mean, everyone. Costa, Harrison was extraordinary. And he said that ball from Alioski into Bamford. There was just so many moments of our wide players just being absolutely on it.
Do you know what? Rodrigo as well. Yeah. Let's not forget, this guy, he's only been here, a fortnight or so? 2-3 weeks, give or take? He's not been here long. And he looks like he's part of the furniture. He looks like he knows exactly where he's supposed to be, when. His all-round gameplay as well, the weight of pass, the positioning of where he starts his movement from. He's sharp. He's so clever. I'm a big, big fan of his.
He just looks class, doesn't he? I want to actually say, you know, as an ex-pro, because he's kind of doing a bit of the stuff that Bamford, you know, has been doing, where it's kind of like he does this job that's exceptional.
Selfless.
Everything sort of runs through him, but he doesn't get the finishes, doesn't get the goals, so he doesn't not necessarily get in the credit for it. But you, as an ex-pro watching that, like, can you just say, like, to people listening, just what, like, how that does not work? Any of that does not work without what he's doing in the middle there.
100%. And it's similar to, I'm not going to talk too much on Patrick Bamford right now because we'll have a little chat about him.
No, we've got a whole section for him.
We have, and rightly so. But what Pat did last season is a lot of what we're seeing from Rodrigo this season.
Right.
You know, but fortunately for us, we've got somebody up front who is in a rich vein of form, who is prolific in front of goal right now, talking about 6 goals in 6 games. So the selfless runs, the selfless movements, the work rate that we saw from Pat Bamford last season, we're seeing that and more from Rodrigo. But we've got Rodrigo backing up Pat Bamford as well. So, you know, we're going to see a lot more goals from Roddy. But what is working right now, Roddy's like the glue in the team. You know, he's mobile, he's quick, his feet are brilliant. His first touch is outrageous as well. He's so class, so much class right there. And without him doing what he's doing, it doesn't work as well or as fluently as it has been this season. He's brilliant, genuinely. And if I was playing now, I would be in awe. I'll be watching in awe of how many chances he creates and how much space he makes as well. He's brilliant. For me, he's a striker's dream to play with.
And actually, talking of that, which could be a nice segue into Mr. Bamford, the shot that he had, You know, I was actually playing. I was playing footy yesterday out here, and it's a makeshift team of people who've, like, some have played before, some have never played before.
What are you doing? 11 aside in the garden again? Yeah,
we've got six aside. I've managed to get like 16 people together, so we're doing six aside. And I was saying I've got subs, haven't we? We've got subs, pal.
Are you joking me?
Come on. I need subs, mate. It's 25 minutes a half. I get tired. Anyway, so we're playing. Like, most of the people have never played before. Like 13 of them have never played before. And I says to him, you ain't going to beat the keeper at the near post. I know you probably think you can. You're not. Shoot across the goal and then you might get it in. And if it comes out, I can knock it in. So shoot across goal. And it seemed like that old adage that we all tell strikers, shoot across goal. But Rodrigo, right there, proving exactly why they tell you to do that.
Exactly. Listen, if you get it on target and you're putting it across goal, there's only a couple of things that's going to happen. The first thing, which is what everybody's hoping, you score. Second thing, you're hoping the goalkeeper parries it out into the middle of the goal for somebody else to score. Or the third thing is he smothers it, he catches it. You know, you have to hit the target for any one of those three things to happen. If the goalkeeper smothers it and he catches it, it gets the crowd off their feet and it gets the adrenaline pumping and it gives you the wind in your sails to go again, you know? And the goalkeepers and the defenders are thinking to themselves, not another onslaught. So that's the good thing that could happen if the goalkeeper saves it. If you shoot across goal and the goalkeeper parries it out, as we saw with Pat, he was in the right place at the right time. Initially, I'm not going to lie, I thought he was a little bit too wide. I thought he was too far outside of the goal to be a real threat. But when I saw where Roddy shot from and the angle, you know, he was putting it right in the corner. Goalkeeper's come out, he's parried it right into the path of Pat. And it's on his strong left foot as well. So if you're left-footed, you want to be coming onto it at that angle where Pat is. If you're right-footed, you want to be a little bit more central. You want to start off a little bit more central. So when the goalkeeper does parry it out, it falls onto your right foot. So it's all about the positioning. That's something that he's definitely given some sort of thought to. Third, going back to the very first one, is you score. You run off into the corner flag, celebrate, slide on your knees, do whatever you need to do. But, you know, out of those situations, you do want to come away with a nice little goal.
I'm going to get you in as a ringer, by the way. When you can fly out here, I'm going to get you to play up front and you can say all this stuff to the team and then maybe they'll learn something then. Well, they don't listen to me, so...
Do they keep trying to pick it up?
Someone did it. I have had two people catch it. But we're getting there. We're getting there. So let's go on to Patty Bamford. I do just want to say I was listening to the Match Ball, the Square Ball Match Ball this weekend. One of our colleagues, rivals, I don't know what you want to call them, and they've given him this new nickname of Lord Justice Bamford, which I thought was the funniest thing I've ever heard, because obviously the Lord thing is quite a common thing.
Is he a Lord as well?
Well, he's just posh, isn't he? Well, are you a Lord? Are you?
I'm a Lord. Yeah, I'm a Lord. Oh, yeah. I'm a Lord of the Manor. Yeah. For Christmas. Listen, you laugh. These things, it's not a laughing matter, mate.
I've got one as well.
Have you got one as well? That's a laughing matter.
I've got one as well. Up in Scotland.
Same here. Yeah. I think we must have the same land. How classic is that?
The same patch next to each other.
Side by side.
He might be a Lord. He might be up there as well. If you could ask him next time you chat to him, that would be great. We might all have land in the same neck of the woods. We all have our pumpkin patches together. But they've called him Lord Justice is what they've now called him. Lord Justice because of the wonderful justice that he meted out after being dragged up off the floor from Mings.
Honestly, right, let's talk about that because that was bang out of order in my opinion.
Yeah.
Bang out of order.
Yeah, I mean, it's violent conduct, isn't it?
Yeah. If somebody's injured and they're on the floor and they're holding their ankle, their foot, their leg, whatever it may be, you cannot, as another, as a professional for the same team or another team, drag somebody off the floor in the manner in which you did. That's violent conduct. It's a straight red card. Absolutely. The reason it wasn't is because it's against Leeds United. It will never happen. It will never happen. Scandalous, honestly.
I mean, if he had broken his ankle, which we've not, you know, there was no way Mings could have known whether he had or he hadn't. He could have rolled it. He could have done some damage to it. If he's pulling him up there and he does more damage to him, I mean, that's like, that is literally a criminal damage. Like, he's injured the guy. I thought you were going to say that.
GBH. No,
ABH. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's injured. He's injured the guy. And I'm just like, well, surely, like, that's a booking at the least.
It should.
And
they
know he's already on a yellow. He's already on a yellow, I believe, at that time, which is probably why it wasn't a yellow. But if that happens anywhere else on the, but if that happens on the middle, on the centre circle, that's a booking.
Absolutely. But listen, it's against Leeds United. So it is what it is. You become accustomed to these sort of things happening and not getting the decision. So,
but the point that they made was that justice was served in the end on the field by Lord Justice Bamford himself.
Or Hat-trick Bamford. How about that? Let's have some of that one.
Hat-trick Bamford. Yes.
Hat-trick Bamford. I'm all over that.
Lord Justice Hat-trick Bamford.
So let's
talk about his goals. I thought his first goal actually deserves more credit than it probably got, you know, when compared to the next two.
Did I not just give it that, no?
No, you did. You did. You did. But, like, I think that his positioning was...
You want to give it some more?
I do, because I want to talk about the finish itself as well. Obviously, the positioning was amazing and having the foresight to be in the right place and pounce on that. But I think it's still difficult. And he's put it right in the corner. And I think that, like, if... I don't know, if it was me, I'd have probably tried to shoot back across and probably been saved by the keeper or I think it was Mings that was there that would have blocked it.
It was Mings, yeah.
He found the corner. And I just thought it was just such a clever finish.
Do you know what? That's something that he's definitely been working on, because last season he would have snatched at it.
Right, exactly.
He would have snatched at it. He would have tried to just make a contact, a clean contact with the ball, not really concentrating or thinking about where it's going. But he's planted it right in the side net, right in the side netting, after being closed down by both the goalkeeper and Tyrone Mings as well. For me, Tyrone Mings has gone in with the wrong type of challenge. He's tried to cover the wrong area. He's tried to cover the area where the goalkeeper is, rather than having a look at what footed Patrick is,
right,
and understanding where he could put the ball. So,
which is probably why he was so upset and
exactly.
Did that business later on.
Yeah, he was frustrated. But listen, what a finish. What a finish. He caught it beautifully, nice and clean, mm-hmm. Concentrated right the way through it. And that split second before he made contact, oh, mate, it was lovely.
That's absolutely right. I think that I just thought with just how amazing the next two goals were, that first one kind of gets lost a little bit.
Yeah, you're right.
And I just thought it was really... exceptional for him with that first one after the misses he'd had in the first half, you know, which I think that can really get to someone, and particularly with Bamford, where, you know, throughout history he's had misses like that and you think, oh god, he's, you know, he's back to being that Bamford, and instead of letting that get to him, he still has the composure, as you say, to put that in that position. Like, he could have easily snatched at that because he was panicking, thinking, I've already missed two sitters, I've got to just put this one away. And he doesn't. And I just think that should be commended before we talk about his next two extraordinary
goals. Do you know
what?
And that's about mindset as well. That's about having confidence in yourself and confidence in your teammates that they are going to set you up for another one and another one and another one and so on and so forth. I was quite lucky when I was playing. I had players that solely looked for me. Anytime they picked the ball up, killer, Neil Kilkenny. Anytime he picked the ball up, the first person he looked to pass to was me, every single time. If I wasn't on, then he would look to pass it to Robert Snodgrass or Max Gradle. But the first pass was always me. And that's exactly what we're seeing in today's game. We're seeing whenever Helder Costa gets it on the right or Jack Harrison gets it on the left, the first person they want to pass to is Pat Bamford to see if he's in on goal, if he can score a goal, if he's going to be a threat on goal. If he's not on, then they look to Roddy just behind him. Or if he's not on, then they come back and go across the pitch and go on the other side and then try again from a different angle. That's something that they obviously know each other's games inside out as well as you could possibly know each other. So to know that if you miss a chance, you're definitely going to get another couple, handful maybe. You don't have to dwell on the ones that you miss. You prepare yourself for the ones that are coming, you know? So it's six and half, six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Well,
how about that?
I mean, he seems like a man reborn. I mean, I actually thought he was, you know, I've always thought he was good. And I think the back end of last season, he was very, very good. But this season already, he just looks like like mentally, I mean, he's always had the ability, but mentally he just looks a man reborn to me.
Possessed, doesn't he?
And yeah, completely. And let's talk about the next two goals, which are just naughty, disgusting. How has he done it? Like, I think the second goal, he was just pissed off.
I had a chat. Pretty much, yeah. I had a chat earlier, and we dissected his goal. And when the ball came through to him, his first touch took him away from goal. So he's on the edge of the 18-yard box. The ball comes into him, fired into him, takes a touch away from goal. I think it was Klitsch fired it into him. And as soon as he's away from goal, he realizes, right, I can sense there's nobody near me now. I can turn around on a half turn. Surprisingly, the two Villa defenders were still on the edge of the 18-yard box. Nobody had gone out with him, which was perfect. Right. Because he lined it up and it was almost Ronaldo-esque in the manner of the way he caught the ball, the connection of the ball. There was no backlift.
It was so weird.
It's such a difficult skill to do, and it's such a hard technique to have as well, because you're opening your foot up to an unnatural position. You know, your foot is literally at a 90-degree angle from where it should be. Instead of facing your toes facing forward, your toes are facing the left. Mm-hmm. Like 90-degree angle, and you're almost using the bone on your heel to make the connection. And I saw a great view of it earlier on today. I saw it from right behind where he struck it. The ball went outside of the post and then came back inside. Goalkeeper had absolutely no chance, right. No chance at all. But it was brilliant. He was just frustrated. He must have been fed up with the referee, with Tyrone Mings, with all of these lot, and just said, you know what, stuff this. You're having it. I'm letting you have it today.
I'm pretty sure, and you can all go back and check, the highlights. Is it Martinez, the goalkeeper? I don't know. He says, wow, after they've picked the goal out of the net. He says, wow, because he's just like, I had no chance.
Exactly. You could have put two goalkeepers in and they wouldn't have had a chance. It was so, like, the power that he hit the ball with and oh my God, everything about it was lovely, mate. Absolutely peachy. And listen, Martinez is a really good goalkeeper. Right, let's move on to the third goal, the hat trick.
To the magic. The hat trick goal, which for me
is my favorite.
You can blame the Villa defenders all you want, but this is the Patrick Bamford show. I mean, he's got no business
doing what he did.
Getting a shot away, never mind a goal. He's no business here.
So listen, so this is the thing. There was a lovely little intricate play down the right wing.
Yeah.
Helders popped it into Shaq's. Shaq's turned, he's setting back and then giving it back to Costa. Costa's played the ball right across the 18-yard box to Pat Bamford, who, in my opinion, again, I thought was in the wrong starting position for a cross. But, you know, I've watched it back so many times as well. It's premeditated. He never intended to get into the near post, across the near post, or across the 6-yard box where all the defenders were. He always intended on sitting just around in between the penalty spot and the edge of the 18-yard box. So when he's picked the ball up, he's taken his first touch and then all of a sudden he's got four Villa defenders around him. Four of them.
Yeah.
The first touch was a great first touch. The second touch just shifted it away from one of the holding midfield players who tried to close him down. And then he bought himself a little bit of time by dropping the shoulder and then just kind of shimmying his body around just so he can open up in time. None of the Villa players knew what to do. Nobody wanted to stick a leg out because you're in the penalty area.
Right.
You know, they know that Leeds should have had a penalty not too long ago. We're not going to give the referee an opportunity to give a 100% penalty against us. So just stand in front of him, just try and block his route to goal. Come on. He bent it with his left foot, the inside of his left foot, bent it around the defenders into the top far corner. Come on.
I mean, I don't know how wide the gap is. But we must be talking about a foot width between the two defenders that he's put the ball through and then
there's
curled
nothing.
It into the corner.
There's no space at all.
I just don't know how he's... It's about a ball's width, isn't it, that he squeezed it through. It's really extraordinary.
It's amazing.
I just really enjoy, you know, there's something about sport when things don't go your way from the referee and a player is meets out the justice by just being good. And it just really felt really satisfying for Bamford to... No, I mean, it's satisfying if Bamford got a hat-trick any time because I love the bloke. But to do it in that match when he'd been, you know, been bullied by Mings or whatever, to just for him to get annoyed and go, you know what? I'm just going to score three goals instead. Like, just great.
I loved great. It. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I genuinely thought it was fantastic.
What do you think about the substitutions that came on? Rafinha and well, obviously Shackleton, who was exceptional. What do you and obviously we talked about Pablo slightly, but Rafinha and Shackleton, what did you think about their performances?
Right, let's talk about Shax first. Shax was brilliant. When he first came on, it's like he's played every single minute of every game this season so far. His positional sense was fantastic. His energy was brilliant. His positioning was great. His passing was very good. I might be being a little bit biased here, but you know, it is what it is. This is doing elites. This is what we do.
Yeah.
I think he was great. He was great fun to watch and great fun to understand what it takes to become a Leeds United player. So when you look at all the other players that come on, Rafinha looked very, very clever. He looked good. He played in, incidentally, he played in the under-23s against Norwich yes. and scored a very, very, very good goal as well.
Yeah.
Have you seen the goal back?
I haven't, mate. I was just looking at the match report now, but I've not seen any of the goals yet.
It's a very good goal. But his debut was very good. It was very good. He didn't really do anything wrong. I think the thing that we need to be cautious of when we're talking about him and watching him play is his defensive capabilities. We don't really know if he's got that right. in the tank yet. Mm-hmm. I would like to think he has, or if he hasn't, I think he will get it very soon, because that's a major part of how we play and what we do. But that being said, I think the substitutions went down really, really well. They all done very well. What about yourself? What do you think?
Well, You've said it, haven't you? You've said it. I think that the a high pressure game like that, you know, obviously with some players coming on when we were already leading, but with Shaq coming on at 0-0, I just thought the assured performance was just, you know, for such a young guy in the Premier League, I now feel very, very comfortable. You know, there was a couple yeah. of players you were like, yeah, I've seen flashes of brilliance, but you know, we're up a big stage now.
What's his overall gameplay like?
Yeah. And just so impressed by how comfortable he seemed on the ball. And then Rafinha, I think, is a bit like Rodrigo in that he's just got that star quality to him. Just his touches, his vision.
Do you think that's because he's Brazilian?
Nah, mate, it's got to be Ane, probably. Yeah, you know I mean?
Just natural ability.
Just know what they're doing, don't they? I felt a bit sorry for the under-23, the Norwich team, when I saw the players that we were actually going to have out. And then we scored after 2 minutes. I thought, oh God.
This is going to be painful for him.
Yeah. But yeah, Poveda as well, you know, scored in that game as well. And he obviously didn't get a run out against Villa, but I think that he's obviously going to be an option going forward.
Do you know what? He's such an exciting player. And I've said this about him before. He's very exciting. The only thing he needs to work on a little bit more is his hold-up play. He needs to be a little bit stronger.
Yeah.
But that's not... I don't mean like going in the gym and jumping on a bench press and start doing like massive weights or anything. I mean like just building up his legs to become a more powerful runner and to hold players off. You know, that aside, I think he's brilliant. He's definitely going to be an exciting player, absolutely, for the future, 100%.
I just think it's really great at the minute that we, you know, if for whatever reason, when we're going forward, it's just not clicking. You know, we might have all the possession, but if we're just not, like one of the wingers isn't quite clicking, or maybe through the middle, it's just not going our way. We now have real game-changing substitutes that can mix it up a little bit. And that bodes well for the future.
They're quite similar type of players as well. Right across the squad. So as you mentioned, if it doesn't quite work out with, let's say, Helder, for example, you could put on one of the other boys. You could put on literally any of those other boys that you brought in there, and they'll do exactly the same job.
Well, with that in mind, I want to talk just very, very quickly, and then I'm done with this game. We've got 3 points. We can move on. But I just want to mention there's this. Fella at ESPN who I don't even know his name.
Does he want to give me a job?
No, he's some dinosaur, some bloated dinosaur that works at ESPN who every week talks about, like, I think he's got a bee in his bonnet about Leeds. So against Man City, he was like, the quote was, some people might enjoy watching a game of basketball, but that's not why I tune into football. If you like this, go and watch the NBA. You know, he did not rate the Leeds performance.
Did he rate Man City's performance that game?
No, he just, I think he just
if
thought
he did,
that
the, he's yeah, an egg.
Right. And but now he's talking about this and he's saying, oh, well, Leeds look great looking forward, but there's no way they can keep this up for the whole season. And it's like, they have these sound bites that they have to say that make them, they think make them sound clever, because they can't be bothered to actually watch anything that's not, that's outside the top six. So obviously has not watched any play of Leeds for the last 2 years.
Well, he should be watching us, because yeah, have we been outside the top six this
but
season?
Well, yeah, there you go. But he's obviously not watched asking us for the last 2 years. And, you know, in a longer season with a thinner squad that we've established, and people go, oh, well, they were saved by lockdown. It's like, but we just won five in a row before lockdown.
Beforehand,
so that's
exactly
bollocks. We weren't showing any signs of fatigue before lockdown whatsoever. And actually, if anything, lockdown sort of threw us off our stride a bit, as we saw with that Cardiff game. Yeah. So that's bollocks. But it's a very, you know, it's a very useful soundbite for someone who's been brought on. I think he's definitely British. And they sort of wheel him out on ESPN as the British expert, who's just like, shit, I've not watched any championship game ever. So I have to think of something to say about this Bielsa team. They'll burn out, they'll get tired. Is that a thing? I'll say that. That sounds like I know what I'm talking about.
I heard somebody say something like that last year. Yeah, we'll use that again. We'll recycle that again.
But the point I'm making is we now have a bigger squad with these wingers, as you say, like similar players that can run and run and run. And, you know, and I don't feel worried now. If Costa's injured, if Harrison's injured or they're tired, I don't feel worried that we just don't have anyone to replace them, because we now do
have it. But the thing is, we've got players to replace it, but we've got quality players
exactly
to replace them. That is the exciting thing. I think, like, and we touched on this in one of the earlier shows as well. We've had probably the best window I think we've had in a long, long time, especially out of anybody in the Premier League, I think, in this window. I think we've smashed it. It's been brilliant.
Okay, next up, we have a guest on for a quick chat with us. Someone quite familiar to me, but I don't think that you have met before, Bex.
I've not met before, but I know the voice.
Ah, oh, very good. It is, in fact, my brother, Anthony Lewis. Welcome, Anthony.
The better of the better looking of the two.
I don't know about that. Hello. Thanks for having me, guys. How are we doing?
Good, thanks. How
are
you?
We're doing well.
Oh, very well, yeah. I've been listening with great interest. It's great to finally come on and say hello to you both. But really enjoying the show.
Oh, good. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming. Take care. See you later.
I'm only messing. My brother Anthony is an actor. I think we talked about him in a previous episode, and you know, a bigger Leeds fan than I am. Been into Leeds forever, and he has a little job on the side that he does, which we're going to try and use to our advantage a little bit, aren't we? So what is it? What is it that you do in your spare time?
Well, every now and again, I'm sure quite a lot of your listeners, and probably you two as well, watch quite a bit of TV. And in between your shows, you tend to get what's known as a continuity announcer. So basically, I work for the BBC, BBC One, Two, BBC Three, Four, just basically introducing the programmes and chatting to the viewers. I'm that kind of annoying person you hear coming out of things like EastEnders going, oh, whatever happened to Sharon, or that, you know, all that kind of stuff. And we do get quite a lot of complaints because quite a few people hate us. But yeah, that's basically what I do.
So with that in mind, we've decided here at Doing a Leeds to twist your arm into, we don't have to twist it very hard, but twist your arm into getting a few Leeds references.
Well, you don't need to twist my arm.
Onto the BBC.
The temptation's there quite a lot of the time, because there's obviously BBC where they have got Match of the Day on there. You've got Question of Sport.
Yep.
You know,
yeah,
when we talk about final score, Football Focus, Five Live, Mr. Beckford himself. So, you know, there's opportunities there, but there's always a kind of an element of, should I do that or not? So, But I'm up for the challenge. I must say, it does appeal to me.
So in the coming weeks, if Bex and I come up with some words to say, some things to say about Leeds doing a Leeds any kind of not advertising, obviously BBC wouldn't be doing anything like that, but just to talk about our great
podcast
our great podcast and the global club that we are a podcast about, would you be up for sneaking
I'll be up
in,
for giving it a go. I think the thing is, doing a Leeds is, that's discreet enough. It's not like I'm, like you said, I'm not like I'm, you're named right. after a product or something that's going to be quite blatantly advertising.
Right okay,
I think there's opportunities there. I can get that in. I think doing a Leeds as a phrase, I think I could get that in. Yeah, I am up for this and I will deliver.
All you Leeds fans listening to this, you know, who pay your license fee, it's going to be worth it. I promise you, it's going to be worth it.
Hey, there's Leeds fans here, there and everywhere. I reckon there's quite a few people we'd be doing a service to here, I reckon. Not just us three.
That's it. And so they're not just going to hear us on a Wednesday anymore. You're going to hear us throughout the week. On BBC.
Yes! That's the plan.
Infiltration.
And perhaps we can open it up. We can open it up to Twitter if anyone wants to get in touch at Doing a Leeds Pod and give us some phrases, some Leeds things that perhaps we could try and force Anthony to say live on TV.
But guys, they've got to be sensible phrases.
Yeah, okay? Keep them PG.
Nothing X-rated.
now that we've teed that up, so we'll probably be getting you back on throughout the coming weeks to talk about... how you kick, because you write your own continuity lines.
So I get a free rein with that, kind of, pretty much.
We'll get you on to talk about how you figured out to get that in, just, you know, before Holmes Under the Hammer and all the rest of it. in the meantime, while we have got you, you know, we were just talking about the Aston Villa game there. Did you enjoy the weekend?
Oh, no, I think I texted you at the time. I said it's amazing what a difference a performance and a 3 points like that can make to your week. Because I think after the Wolves game, I just felt so desolate, and I thought, oh God, we're going to tee ourselves up here for a potential defeat, because they had some tough fixtures coming up as well. And I thought, I hope that guys' heads don't drop. And then you got the injury to Phillips, and then the injury to, you know, in our defence, having to move the whole defence around, three fullbacks playing. I thought, you know, the form Villa are in, this is going to be tough. And I mean, that was one of the most convincing performances I've seen from a Leeds side in a long time. So very, very happy after Friday. Yeah, great stuff.
See, this is what we love to hear.
So if you could get that in, if you could put that right before the 6 o'clock news, that would be great.
Literally word for word.
Now, Hugh Edwards.
Yeah, on that note, let's move on to Leicester, shall we? Thank you for that, Anthony. Appreciate that. We look forward to having you back on, and we'll all be all ears listening to the BBC in the coming weeks.
Cheers, chaps. Appreciate it.
Can't wait. Right, let's go into Monday night's game. Leicester City, Premier League champions 4 years ago.
Yep.
You know, one of my old clubs. Very, very good team.
How long were you at Leicester?
Couple years.
Yeah.
Couple years. I enjoyed my time there. I didn't move to Leicester, which I think was a mistake of mine. I commuted initially, and I knew somebody that drove, so I got them to drive me from mine to Leicester initially, while we were looking for a place over in Edgbaston in the Midlands, Birmingham. Yeah. Because from there, it's only half an hour away. But it's an amazing place, amazing club, fantastic owners. And a lot of the boys that are there now, they were still a part of the club when I was there as well. Right. So it's, you know, Wes Morgan was a skipper then, and he's still floating around there now. You've got Jamie Vardy who... Listen, it's Jamie Vardy. Everybody knows him. But when he first came in, he was the first player to sign from non-league for £1 million, I think it was. So we got him from Fleetwood. That was just before they got promoted to League Two. Like, there's so many players there that were a major part of the club that were there when I was there. Absolute legends, legendary status as well. And what the owners did for that club as well, they bought it from a club that had Premier League experience that were really good to... And they, to be fair, they were down in League One as well for a little bit. And the current owners managed to bring the club back to the Premier League and fortunately won the title within 2 years of being back in the Premier League. You know, that is incredible. And I think that's something that is absolutely doable for us.
So with that in mind, now that we've had this Leicester City love-in, tell me how we're going to beat them.
it's more of the same, isn't it? It's more of the same. It's doing the simple things well, and it's working really hard at the things that we need to do. Overrun them in the areas that we have been doing, overload in the fullback positions, the wingback positions.
Yeah.
But we have to be wary. We have to be cautious of the threat of Jamie Vardy on the counterattack. We have to be. We'd be naive if we didn't look into that.
Looking at the Arsenal game this weekend, do you think they're going to set up similar to Wolves and try and do a smash and grab?
Yes, I do. But that's not taken away from any of the quality players that they have in their ranks. You know, they've got Tielemans, who plays in midfield, who is, for me, he's a brilliant midfielder. He's such an exciting midfield player. They've got Harvey Barnes as well, who's a really, really strong runner. But they've also got players in the team that have got Premier League experience, like Johnny Evans, for example, who's been there for donkeys. You know, I think we just have to be cautious, but I don't think we need to pay them that much respect. I think Madison in midfield, I think if we stop the supply line going into him, we can stop a big part of Leicester's attack. The wingbacks, I think their wingbacks are pretty good as well. Is it Justin and Castagne or something along those lines? You know, they like to play pretty attacking football, but they've got wingbacks. So if they set up with in the 3-5-2 formation, which is what they, I think they did that against Arsenal. If they set up in the 3-5-2, that will suit us perfectly, because we'll just throw the overloads in the wingback positions and get them on the back foot.
How do you feel about Brendan Rodgers as a manager? And I ask this because I feel like there's a couple of managers in the Premier League. We saw a bit in the sort of the Dean Smith thing, that when you're up, when you go up a goal and your players, you know, through their individual brilliance, Jack Grealish or whatever, managed to get a goal, everything's plain sailing, you're winning, it's great. But when things are going wrong and you're down, it looked like Villa were just like, they had no counter to what we were doing. And so I'm thinking with Brendan Rodgers, for example, if Leeds do get on top in the first half and dominate the first half, do you think he's got the tactical nous to change things in the second half? Or do you think that if we get on top, we'll stay on top?
I think if we get on top, we'll stay on top. But that being said, I also know that Brendan Rodgers has managed Swansea City, and he changed them from a mediocre side to a very good footballing side. Mm-hmm. He left there, he went to Liverpool. Again, he turned them from a good footballing side to a better footballing side. He left Liverpool, he went to Celtic, absolutely dominated the league, which you expect. It's a two-team league, and you know there's not really that much competition. But the thing that's impressed me the most about him is what he's done since he's come back to England, to Leicester. Mm-hmm. I think he's changed the way Leicester play. He's changed the way Jamie Vardy plays as well. Like, everybody knows Vards is lethal with his pace, and he's very, very good finisher. But the thing that he's brought to Jamie is, he stopped him doing unnecessary runs out wide into the channels, where his movement and his runs are wasted because he's got nobody filling in the space in the middle of the pitch where he's just vacated. He's got him staying central and making the runs inside the right centre half and the centre half and the left centre half and the left wing back, sorry, left back and the left wing back. And the right back and the right wing back. He's got him making those runs in between those areas there. So he's not running into the channels. He's still making his runs, but they're within the width of the 18-yard box. That is where he's lethal. Left foot, right foot, even in the air. He's not tall. He's 5'8"-ish, 5'9". But his heading ability is very, very good. You know, so he's a lethal player to watch out for. So I think Brendan is definitely... I don't think he will dominate the game at any period. I think we'll comfortably dominate possession. But that being said, I think, as I mentioned before, on the counter-attack, I think that's exactly where we need to be careful and the most cautious.
So thinking with that, what we've got 10 days between the Villa and Leicester games. You've got players coming back, Cooper, possibly Llorente. But, I mean, it's very difficult for Bielsa now, because can you afford to drop...
It's not difficult for Bielsa. For normal managers.
Yeah, for different
managers. They'll be looking around thinking, oh no, who do I pick? Bielsa's, yeah, he already knows which team he's going to pick in 3 weeks' time, 4 weeks' time.
But it is fascinating because the players perform so well, you know, at Villa. You know, like we mentioned, Alioski, Shackleton, whatever. It's like, it's going to be interesting to see who he puts in there to counter that threat from Vardy and the marauding wingbacks, as you were suggesting. Like, it's going to be interesting.
I think it will be exactly the same starting 11. Genuinely, I think it'll be exactly the same starting 11. Yeah. Yeah.
So you don't think Koops will come back into the side?
No, I don't think you'll risk him because he's had a breakdown. So the likelihood of that happening again 10 days from when he did it initially, I don't think it's worth the risk of missing him again for another fortnight or so. For the sake of missing one more game against Leicester, I think the bigger picture is much brighter if he does miss it, because then it gives him just under 3 weeks to really get himself back to full fitness, especially the way that we play football, the way the tempo that we play with, the intensity and the physicality of it. So I would be very, very surprised if Koops is back in. I want to see Koops back in. Don't get me wrong for a second. I think he's a brilliant captain and he's a great leader, but I don't think he'll rush him. I really don't. So I think it'll be exactly the same starting.
These injuries could be a blessing in disguise, really. I mean, being able to blood some of these other players at this level, but also giving players like Koops and Calvin a breather, really. You know, just a bit of time.
Like you said, it's given the younger players a chance to get blooded into the Premier League, get up to speed, up to pace, and it's given the new boys an opportunity to come in and play as well.
So, talk to me in terms of, just very quickly, prediction.
Oh, 3-1 Leeds.
Okay.
I don't think we'll keep a clean sheet for the whole game against Jamie Vardy on the counter. I don't. I want us to, but I don't think we will. What about you? You've got to predict.
I think that we will find it tough to break them down at the back. I think they're going to be very disciplined, but I still think that we have goals there. I'm going to say 1-0 Leeds.
Boring, oh.
I know. I think we might just nick it.
Nah, we don't just nick things. We win.
We shall see, won't we?
I'll bet you a quid.
See. I tell you what, I'm going to... Okay.
Have some of that. That's how we roll over here. Doing really, the Leeds, baby.
Really made me laugh. That really, really tickled me. Yeah, all right. I'll put a quid on it. I am going to, for the first time this week, I'm going to take notes during the game, because when Leeds are playing as well as they did against Villa, and with everything on the line, you know, with the whole comments from Gabby and just weird Villa fans, it felt like beating scum a little bit. I really wanted to win that game.
It was nice, wasn't it?
And so I had I enjoyed my time in the pub. And I think that moving forward, I might need to start taking notes so that I remember what to talk about afterwards.
Do you know
what?
Just use Siri. Use the dictaphone on Siri. It's much easier.
Okay.
Pop an AirPod in and then just say, hey Siri, take notes quickly before I forget. Oh no, I've forgotten it.
That's it. And I'm going to be, as I've said, I'm going to be up in Washington, D.C. for the next pod. I'm going to be watching. Oh, Siri, is she woken up?
Siri's nosy.
What? Quickly before I go, no, I forgot it.
What? Siri. See, this is how we have to ruin this house, mate.
Excellent. So I am going to be watching the game in Washington, D.C. So I will not be with the Supporters Club this week. We'll be doing our election special Leicester City podcast from Washington, D.C. next week.
Decent. White House in the background.
There we go. That is another episode of Doing Leeds Under the Belt. Thank you very much for tuning in.
Episode 8.
Tell your mates. Thanks for all your tweets.
And thank you very much for tuning in, guys, girls, boys and girls, and ladies and gents.
I'm sorry that you have to listen to this guy for an hour a week. I really am. I'm sorry.
Don't forget to get at us on Twitter, Doing a Leeds Pod. Hit us up. You know, we're... should we do questions next week?
Yeah, we can do some questions. Questions. We'll do some fans questions next week. Yeah, why not?
Throw us your questions, guys. Let us know what you want to know. It could be literally anything. No filters.
We've actually, I'm not going to say anything, but we have got some interesting guests coming up.
We have indeed.
I'm quite excited.
I know you are. Look at that. That's the first time I've seen him smile.
Ah.
Jeez, what is going on here? I love it. Right, guys, love ya.
Bye.
Ciao. Doing a Leeds is a Lovely Stuff production, produced by Dave Cribb and Will Wood. Music by Dave Cribb.
As you all know, at Doing a Leeds, we try and do a charity shout out as often as we can to highlight various foundations and charities that are going. This week, we wanted to touch on the Leeds Rhinos Foundation, which is the official charity of the Leeds Rhinos, of which I am also vice president, inexplicably, but I am. They deliver projects in the heart of the community by harnessing the power of sport to make a lasting positive impact on individuals' lives. Some of the projects include working with people living with dementia, victims of domestic abuse, and some of the most vulnerable people in the community. Over the last 3 years, they've helped hundreds of men kickstart a healthier lifestyle and tackle obesity through their Tri Club Men's Fitness Program. They've aimed to tackle loneliness with their active social group for people over 55 and have inspired thousands of young people to get active. I've been very fortunate to be firsthand with some of this stuff, and it really is a wonderful foundation. In recent years, the charity has also launched a physical disability rugby league side and a learning disability rugby league side, and is committed to making sport inclusive and accessible for all. These teams have gone on to play at Emerald Headingley and Old Trafford. There are many, many inspirational stories about the positive impact that this has had on the players' lives. The charity are also going to be running an individual 10K event on the 22nd of November to raise money for the charity and the Rob Burrow Fund. It should have been the day of the Leeds 10K, which I was planning on running in myself, but has obviously been cancelled. So they're doing their own event. Please, please try and support this great, great foundation, this great charity, and of course for the legend Rob Burrow. You can support at LeedsRhinosFoundation.org. As I say, they are doing so many great things, and really, really could do with a little bit of your extra support. So that is LeedsRhinosFoundation.org. Thank you.